Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned. In this episode, we'll be discussing weather magic and lore.
We'll also be introducing our new segments, Witchcraft with Me, Lane, and Magic Spelled Out with Corey.
We think we've got an exciting show for you, so stick around. So today we're discussing weather magic and lore. Now, we actually have done several blog posts regarding this topic, and for those of you who have been followers of the blog or have listened to the podcast for a while now, you know that a while back we did
a contest on weather lore, and we had readers send in their weather lore so we could get more from all over the country instead of just the South.
Yeah, we got some really good responses to it.
So thank you again to everybody who sent it, and we really appreciate it.
Yay! Thank you, everyone! You're wonderful! We love you! All right, so let's start with this feedback is from Sarah R. Says, hi, Corey and Lane. First of all, I want to say great job with the podcast and blog. I found my way here through Juniper and Brendan's Standing Stone and Garden Gate, and now it's certainly one of my favorite shows. Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. Secondly, I just wanted to share some of the weather lore my grandfather shared with me. A definite big one is cows laying down if it is going to rain. But in this area, it seems when it's going to storm, the cows bed down in a circular pattern, and the tighter the pattern, the rougher the storm is going to be. Maybe our cows here in the Northeast are just overachievers. So, yeah.
Damn Yankee cows.
Our cows down in the South, they're lazy. Yeah, that's one that I know I've heard.
Uh-huh.
Growing up, I've heard, you know, if you see more cows lying down in a field than standing up, it means there's definitely a storm coming.
Well, for me, I've always just heard rain. It wasn't necessarily a storm. It was just it was going to rain. And I've heard that since I was really little. And I don't remember who I heard it from, but I remember hearing it at some point and using it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's interesting that it really is just cows. I raised sheep for quite a while, and sheep don't do that. Sheep don't lie down for storms. No, they tend to move towards higher ground if there's a big storm coming, but I mean, even that's not always a guarantee.
Well, with sheep, though, wool tends to wick moisture away instead of, you know, and you can be, wool can absorb water like up to 3 times. Weight or something like that. I'm not describing it very well without actually feeling wet or cold.
Mm-hmm.
So sheep don't necessarily have to do that.
What do you know about wool?
Lots, as we will come to find out.
Yes, in our later segment. I don't know. Yeah, sheep maybe just don't feel it the way that cows do.
Yeah.
So. Sarah R. continues, another one, you can tell the severity of a winter by the placement of a hornet's nest. If they are lower to the ground, the winter will be not so bad. But if they are higher up in the trees, you had better be prepared for lots of snow and ice in the winter months. I've read that one, I think, in the Foxfire books. I remember reading something about that.
I have not heard that one before. But, it makes sense that way. If, you know, there's going to be a ton of snow, they don't want their nest to be too
frozen.
Close to it. Yeah, or frozen. So.
Yeah, because the nest has to winter over.
Right. So that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. So that does make some sense. And not that I don't particularly think all of them have to make logical sense.
Right. Like, yeah. Me neither.
Sometimes it's really just like, oh, there are 3 birds over there. That means this thing. And I don't really necessarily look for a scientific reason.
Right.
It,
yeah.
And finally, Sarah R. says, and the last one always helped me feel safe as a little girl during tornado season. If a tornado is coming, not a peep from anything can be heard outside. So if you hear birds and crickets chirping and various other animals and bugs making noise during a storm, you're safe from a tornado. I know, we're right on the borderline of Tornado Alley here. And,
we had a tornado that was really close to my house when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
Yeah. Tornadoes are just interesting phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was a teenager, I could sleep really, really soundly. And I remember one morning waking up and noticing that everything was really green, like really like green color to the light everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's really interesting. And I go and I look out my window, and we lived on a farm where the house was built basically on a hilltop. And I looked down, and maybe a half a mile away, there was a funnel cloud receding up into the sky.
Oh, lovely.
So it had basically gone right by my house, and I just now noticed it just slipped right through it.
Wow.
But yeah, there's always that stillness before a tornado mm-hmm. hits.
Let's see. Here's another one from Raitha. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Sure, we'll go with that. Okay. If we're horribly butchering that, we apologize.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Feel free to correct us on
that. Let's see. They say, "Hi, Corey and Lane. Thanks so much for the great podcast. I'm really enjoying it so far. Thank you. I'm writing to share some of the weather lore I've picked up having lived my entire life in central and eastern Massachusetts. My paternal grandparents, in particular, were a wellspring of local weather lore. They lived on a small farm in central Massachusetts, and my parents and I lived a little further down the same road. Having spent a lot of time with them as a little girl, I learned a great deal from them. My grandmother used to tell me that if the skin on the autumn apples was tougher and thicker than usual, it would be a long, cold winter. The same could be said if the corn husks grew extra thick. A snowy winter would mean a plentiful harvest in the coming autumn, though."
Yeah, I can see that.
Once again, that one makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to thicken up if it was going to be really cold out.
That does make me wonder, though, you know, when we talk about animals knowing a storm is coming, that seems fairly immediate. And, you know, hornets, but, you know, the hornets building their nest up from the ground or the plants building thicker skins. How do they know?
Good point.
Something to think about, but they do. Anyway.
Let's see. My grandfather used to say that if a person kills a snake, what one did with the body could affect the weather. If the snake's body is hung in a tree, rain is sure to come. If the snake's body is buried, you'll guarantee clear and fair weather. That one's interesting to me. I've never heard that, but, you know, then again, it may be just a New England type of thing.
Regional thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the snake might be fairly regional, although snakes are in a lot of magical lore, period.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one that I encountered, I think it was in Nova Scotian, a bit of weather lore, where if you killed a spider outside, it would bring storms.
So yeah, sort of similar to that. I've always heard it's bad luck to kill a spider inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it brings bad luck to kill them inside, but it right. brings a storm to kill them outside.
Huh, interesting. I would never kill one outside because, you know, they're in their habitat, they're not bugging me. Mm-hmm. But
with the exception of black widows, I'll kill those little bastards anytime.
Or brown recluse.
Mm-hmm.
The whole necrotizing flesh thing mm-hmm. scares me to death, so.
Yeah, but otherwise I'm very, very cool with most spiders.
Mm-hmm. I'll just put them outside. So, let's see. What else does she have to say? When the leaves on the trees turn up their undersides, a thunderstorm is imminent.
Oh my yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my yes. I've heard that and I've seen that happen time. Yeah, and it's only specific trees. It's like
to look, but
maples. I think it's a specific type of maple, like a silver maple. But if you see and I've heard it referred to even as silvering. If you see a tree silver,
that's neat.
Mm-hmm, then it's going to storm. And you can actually see it. Like next time that you know there's a storm coming, look at the trees. I know that seems kind of the reverse of using the weather lore, but just, you know, look at the trees and see, you'll see the undersides all kind of shining up and it'll look like a wave of silver covering the tree.
Neat.
It's pretty cool.
If a halo is seen around the moon, stormy weather is on its way.
Yeah, I just made the Beyonce halo dance. Whatever.
Oh,
see your halo.
You have to include that.
Do I?
No cutting this out.
Whatever. We love our Beyonce.
Anyway.
And our Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm sure that just like half of our fans just were like, oh, I'm never listening to this again. Lady Gaga and Beyonce. What's that crap? Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste, especially ours. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Oh, there's one last thing.
Yes.
Let's see. She says, but ultimately, when it comes to New England weather, I think Mark Twain said it best, if you don't like the weather in New England, just wait a few minutes. That's funny, because where we live, we have that exact same saying.
Yes.
So.
I think that's true about 75% of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most people have that expression. And this sounds really awful. I think probably most people think it's only true of their region.
Right.
And I'm like, no, it's probably true. Like, the places I don't think of that being true are places like Arizona, where there's a fairly steady temperature.
Uh-huh.
Southern California, same kind of thing.
Right.
Very steady temperatures. Generally speaking, Florida. But anyway. All right. This next one is from Oriya, who is the host of Media Astra Octera. I think we've talked about her on the mm-hmm. show before. She says, hey, Corey, just saw your reminder about the quest for weather lore in your next episode. You've probably heard this one, but I was raised in a devout Irish Catholic family, and the favored method of providing good weather for a wedding or other family event was to put a statue of the Virgin Mary in the window. I'm sure my mom also prayed to Mary in support of this quote-unquote spell, a word she would never use to describe it, of course. But the act of putting the statue in the window was considered important. And to be honest, I hadn't really heard that before. I mean, there's a lot of Marian devotionals that you can do, having been raised, you know, partially Catholic. I remember there were definitely Marian devotionals for almost everything. But that one was new, the statue of Mary in the window. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. But then again, that's not saying much.
Yeah. So I think it's neat. I do know that there, and Orion and I kind of exchanged on this a little bit, there is something about burying a statue of St. Joseph upside down mm-hmm. on your property. House? Yeah, if you're trying to sell
your
house.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
So,
that's the only bit of Catholic lore I know, that one in St. Anthony.
Did you pray to St. Anthony?
Oh, goodness. Anyway, moving on. Annika also wrote us, the winner of our contest.
Yay, go Annika! Woo!
So Annika says, as an add-on to Lane's experiences, I remember being 8-ish and making up a rain dance. This is silly, but I was inspired by the Native American themes in the movie Man of the House. I totally remember that movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Chevy Chase.
Wow. Yeah, I don't remember that.
Annika, you are not alone. let's see. Maybe it was already gray outside and ready to pour, but I couldn't have been convinced otherwise of just having been heard by the rain gods. You know, it's funny. When I was in high school, I was involved in plays a lot and, you know, drama. Mm-hmm. And it would be late and we'd be waiting for our parents to come pick us up. And we would do snow dances in hope that, like, in the winter in hopes that we would miss school the next day. Mm-hmm. Like, we were being silly, but we were also, like,
earnestly hoping it would happen.
Yeah, like, really dancing for snow. So
how often did it work?
If I remember correctly, which, granted, I could be remembering or misremembering, but every time.
Wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, we never did them just randomly, like if it was, you know, 70 degrees out. We always did it when it was calling for snow, but nobody was really sure if they were going to call it. And, you know, it was going to be like early morning when you wake up and, oh, schools are closed.
Sort of an encouragement as opposed to a vacation or a...
Exactly. Yeah. So.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
So what else does Annika say? We are all compelled to make an emotional link to an influential phenomenon. And why not? Weather is dependent on a rhythm. It is produced by the heat of the oceans, it is monitored by the latitude of the earth, and altered by the particles in the atmosphere. In short, it is more than conducive to minor external global changes, and maybe even minor pleas from little humans.
I like how she puts that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think that kind of gets to a philosophy of weather magic. You know, there's, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they don't think of people as being able to affect the weather. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't think, you know, we control it as a whole, but I think we have some influence, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have influence over every other thing in our lives. Why not the weather?
Yeah. And I mean, people, you know, complain about global climate change and, you know, we certainly have something to do with that. Even, you know, I'm not coming down hard on one side of that argument or the other. I know there's a lot of debate about it, mm-hmm. but. You know, we certainly have had some impact on the world.
We had to, yeah. There's how many people on this earth?
Yeah, seriously. We all jump at once, we're screwed. You know. This next section is a series of pieces, or a series of bits of weather lore from Juniper, who you may remember as our guest from, I think, episode 4?
I think so.
Juniper up in Canada. And she says... First, a few pieces of farmer's weather lore that I've found are completely bunk, as in untrue. Cats scratch a post before a wind, wash their faces before a rain, and sit with their back toward the fire before snow. She says, as any cat owner will tell you, cats do all of these things often, many times a day, with no correlation to the weather. However, you will still find this little piece of superstition in the odd book and on websites. Including on our website. Not that we're disseminating it, we're just kind of collecting the folklore. So.
Right.
But, yeah, so there's that. If a rooster crows at night, there will be rain by morning. She says, this has more to do with the rooster trying to get laid, trying to scare off a fox or other predator, or having a territory dispute with another rooster in a pen nearby. I don't know. We had a rooster on our farm, and the only times I remember him crowing were for sunrise and sunset, so...
I had the neighbors across the street from us had roosters and chickens. And that's all. The only time I remember him crowing too was Sunset and Sunrise.
Yeah.
Usually so, Sunset, which bugged the crap out of me.
Yeah, throws you off a little bit.
Yeah.
You're like, I thought you were supposed to do it in the morning. That's what they show on TV. TV lied to me. When dogs eat grass, you can expect a severe storm. Dogs eat grass for nutrition, and because it can help with digestion, they will eat grass whether a storm is coming or not. I think that she's making an excellent point there. I have also heard, and I hate to say this without having any, like, real evidence to back it up, so I may have to go do some Google foo and mm-hmm. dig up some stuff. But I have heard that dogs' stomachs are fairly sensitive to changes in climatological pressure. And so, while yes, they will eat grass anytime, they tend to eat grass before storms as well, because they're trying to alleviate pressure on their stomachs.
Well, this is only my experience with my animals, my dogs, mm-hmm. which I have three of, and they will only eat grass when their stomach is upset, and they need it because, I mean, grass doesn't necessarily help in digestion in that it helps them digest anything. It helps digestion in that it makes them throw up.
Right.
So it's sort of like, you know, doggy epicac.
Right. And that's what I've always heard with the before the storm thing is they'll eat it so that they'll throw up and that pressure that's on their stomach mm-hmm. will be alleviated because they've gotten something out of it.
Right.
I'm saying that and saying that I believe I've read that has some scientific backing, but I can't guarantee that. And as far as I know, Juniper's right about, you know, they'll eat for a lot of reasons, they'll eat grass.
Yeah, definitely.
So the storm thing, it's not a surefire sign for sure. Not a surefire sign for sure. Way to use that English degree, Corey. All right, birds on a telephone wire predict the coming of rain. Juniper says, or it simply means the flock is taking a break and hanging out. Seeing them all take off and go hunker down in a bit of shrubbery is a better indicator. I can kind of go with that. I know that if you see in our area, we have something called grackles, mm-hmm. which are a type of blackbird. And if you see a bunch of them hunker down in a tree, then it's usually a sign of a storm coming. Or if it's right before nightfall, it's just night coming.
Right.
So, and then she has a few that she says are more accurate.
Let's see. If bears and horses get thick coats early, then expect a severe winter. Never been around horses and never wanted to be close to bears, so.
mm-hmm. And that gets back to that whole, how do they know?
Right.
They do. Mm-hmm. Wonderful animals, wonderful nature. Pigs gather leaves and straw before a storm. Indeed, they often do, she says. And seems true enough. We raised pigs, but I did my best to avoid them because I did not enjoy raising them. They were not fun, but.
Are they filthy animals?
Pigs are filthy animals. Zugu rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I never know because I'd never eat the filthy. Never mind. Pulp Fiction.
Oh, I've only seen that movie once.
Oh, well, okay. I can't believe that you quoted it.
I had no idea.
Whatevs. let's see. If cows lie down or refuse to go to pasture, you can expect your storm to blow up soon. I think that we've already discussed that. Cows lying down in the pasture.
Oh, yeah. If a dog starts to whine for no reason, you can expect a major storm. Not in my experience, but then again, my dogs are weird.
Right. And even Juniper says, I suppose this depends on the dog. Some dogs seem to know when a storm are coming and some don't. We do know that dogs sense earthquakes before we do.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
And I'll try to put a link to that video.
You should.
Because I really, yeah. There's a video that we've watched where you can see this dog reacting to an earthquake a full 5-10 seconds before the earthquake actually hits.
Mm-hmm. And he's in a building, too. It's not like he's outside. He's in a 2 or 3-story building.
Yeah, it's a 2 or 3-story office building. And he's just kind of chilling and relaxed. And all of a sudden he bolts up and starts running for the exit. And everybody else is just kind of like, well, that was weird. And then the building starts shaking. And they're like, oh,
yeah,
smart dog. So, Reggie. Let's see. Yeah, so that's from Juniper. And we thank everybody very much for their contributions to the weather lore. That's mm-hmm. We got some really good responses, some really good lore, and it just makes me happy.
Me too. It's really nice to hear different parts of the country have things in common and different things. I like that.
Right. And there seems to be a sort of consensus on the fundamental things underlying
mm-hmm.
a lot of this weather lore, like the whole, you know, coats get thicker in winter.
Right.
Whether you're talking about apples or whether you're talking about woolly worms or whether you're talking about horses and dogs.
Woolly worms is a big one down here.
Yeah, woolly worms in the South is the way we
and
tell.
If you don't know what a woolly worm is, it's like a caterpillar more than it is mm-hmm. a worm.
Yeah, it's a caterpillar.
And they're furry, but and they're black and orange, kind of. It's like a burnt mm-hmm. orange color.
Yeah.
Almost like a copper. I could be totally making this up, but doesn't the amount of black and orange have something to do with something as well?
Oh. Yes. I can't remember the actual lore.
I can't
I may have to do some digging to, because it might be in one of these books. Okay. If the black band on his back is why, this is from the Foxfire book, the first of the Foxfire series. The woolly worm tells of a bad winter if the black band on his back is wide. The more black than brown he is, and or the wider the black stripe, the worse the winter will be.
Oh.
If he's black in front, the bad weather is to come, and if he's black behind, the worst weather is past. If he's brown on both ends and orange in the middle, the winter will be mild.
There's a lot of woolly worm info.
Yeah, woolly worms are our thermometer, barometer of weather around here, I think.
Big one.
So what are some? So we've got some others that we collected, as far as
one that I know of that is actually scientifically accurate mm-hmm. is the amount of chirps within a minute. I think mm-hmm. of a cricket. There's some formula you can do, and it corresponds to the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it's chirping faster, it's warmer.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact. The exact thing. I think we actually have referenced that, or somebody may have pointed it out on our blog at one point, saying that the faster or more chirps that you get in a certain amount of time, the higher the temperature.
Mm-hmm. And scientists have studied this, and it's true, which I think is pretty cool.
I know where I've heard that recently.
What?
It was featured on an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, really?
Yes. They were having a debate about a specific cricket that had been caught in the apartment. And the main nerd, Sheldon.
Oh, didn't we watch that together?
I think so. And he was like, oh, it's this temperature in the room because he had counted it and calculated it.
Yeah.
And then he was wrong about the species of cricket or something.
Yeah.
Very strange. So anyway. And so some of the other things that have to do with predicting weather have to do with reading the weather according to... Sounds weird. Reading the weather according to the sky, mm-hmm. or according to certain astronomical or meteorological phenomenon.
Like what?
The one that comes to mind immediately for me is red sky at morning, sailor take warning, red sky at night, sailor's delight, which I've heard so many variations of
mm-hmm.
that I don't know to trust it anymore.
Really?
Yeah, because I've also heard red sky at night, sailor affright, red sky at morning, all clear, no warning. So it's complete inversion. Opposite. And I'm like, I got nothing.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other one that comes to mind, and this is one that I was testing it against this year, and I think it was almost accurate. It doesn't really bode well. But fogs in August or snows in winter.
Hmm.
So however many fogs you have in August, that will be the number of significant snow accumulations you have in winter.
Huh.
And this year, in our area, we had 2.5 fogs in August because we have two really foggy days. Mm-hmm. And then we had one day where there was low fog for part of the morning and it burned off really quickly.
Hmm.
And we had 3.5 snowstorms.
Three major ones, yeah.
Yeah, three major snowstorms and then one small dusting.
Yeah.
So it's possible maybe I just missed whatever that third fog was.
Maybe.
Or it's possible it's completely a load of crap.
That's quite possible, too.
Let's see. Here's one from the Foxfire book. It says, the number of days old the moon is at the first snow tells how many snows there will be that winter.
Hmm.
So I've never tested that. I have no idea.
We could probably go back and look at our first snow and see if that works.
Yeah, that would be interesting because that's one we can actually cross-check.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way you think. Excellent. Very good. All right, forecasting weather. if it rains on blasting days, which are the three longest days of the year, which would be the days around midsummer, mm-hmm. there won't be any mast for animals like hogs to feed on. Mast being things like acorns, chestnuts, the natural food that they would normally find. So I don't really know if that's true or not.
I have no idea. I
haven't really spent a lot of time around wild hogs, much less paying attention to their eating habits.
No.
If a wild hog ever invites me to dinner, I'll let you know. Here's one we can test out this weekend, but not you all, because this will be coming out after this weekend. So I don't know why I just said that, but anyway, if it rains on Easter Sunday, it will rain every Sunday for 7 weeks.
Oh.
So it's kind of a Groundhog's Day
sort
of thing. Oh, Groundhog's Day. There's a hole.
Duh.
Yeah, whole weather lore phenomenon right there. Yeah.
The groundhog comes out, sees its shadow.
Mm-hmm.
If it does see it, 7 more weeks of winter?
Nope.
No.
It does see the shadow if the weather is clear. Oh, no, yeah, you're right. You're right. So if it does see the, yeah, if the weather is fair on the Groundhog's Day and it sees its shadow, 7 more weeks of winter or 6 weeks of winter. And if it doesn't see its shadow, if it's overcast and gloomy, then winter's only got 6 more weeks to go.
Right. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. You just said the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing as you. Yeah, you were right.
No, but you said 6 more weeks of winter and then 6 more weeks to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how that works.
That doesn't make any sense.
It does if you take it all with a grain of salt.
So, confused.
The older tradition, the older European tradition that would feature something like the Candlemas Bear, or they used to predict it by badgers in Europe. Was if either of those animals saw their shadow, then winter was going to be long and harsh right up until the changeover to spring. And if they didn't see their shadow, then winter would have a very mild ending.
Mm.
And so you might get a little bit of an early spring. But I found when it kind of came into America, we have a bit of a sense of humor about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we turned it into, if it sees its shadow, then we have 6 more weeks of winter to go. But if it doesn't see its shadow, we've only got 6 weeks until spring.
Okay. See, I never took it that way. I always say if it didn't see its shadow, then, you know, spring was really close and it was going to be the mild ending.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about with in Europe. So.
Right. And that's the actual older folklore that goes with it.
Right.
I just think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I could think it's a funny twist on it to be like, oh, we've definitely got, you know, 6 more weeks of winter, or only 6 weeks till spring. Yay. It's kind of a fun way to play with it. I like it.
I just love Bill Murray.
Yeah. That's really where we get most of our folklore.
Yeah, Bill Murray. Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm. anyway, the first 12 days after Christmas indicate what each month of the next year will be like. I've heard that where, in other words, if it's very, you know, cold and wet for the first 3 days after Christmas, you get 3 months of cold, wet winter.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, you know, fair right after Christmas, then you wind up with
a mild January, February, March.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So I've heard that. Didn't really test it out. Don't know how it holds. I guess we could
go back and reference that as well.
Bless who is it that does all the meteorological data? It's the U.S. Naval Observatory.
Hmm.
I will say that. Bless the U.S. Naval Observatory. I'm sure they could use it. And bless you. Anyway. I think that's about it. Oh, a long hot summer means a long cold winter. The hotter the summer, the colder the winter.
Hmm.
I've heard that. I've always felt like it's true because I always feel like after a really hot summer, the winter is really, really cold.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's just one of those things where you're like, summer is done.
It just feels like that. But then again, it kind of makes sense in a logical way because of, you know, how like everything in the natural world sort of seeks a balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see if, you know, one thing is extra hot to sort of like even the scale, it would be extra cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that working out.
Mm-hmm. I remember back in the late 90s, early aughts, as it were, there was a lot of talk about the El Nino and La Nina effect and how we would be getting longer, hotter summers, but shorter winters, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they would be more intense winters. So I don't know if that might be related to this phenomenon or not.
I don't know.
Not sure. But I do know that it's funny. Like, I don't think that a cold, long, cold winter predicts a hot summer. But I do think a long, hot summer predicts a cold winter.
So, yes.
I don't know. We could probably look at that, too. Mm-hmm. Bless that U.S. Naval Observatory.
So, anyway. So, we've gone over, you know, the different types of, I guess, categories. So, like, there's, you know, animals, and then food and plants, and the sky signs. So, now we want to talk about weather magic.
Yes, controlling the weather. It's the dawn of time, man has sought to block out the sun. As Mr. Burns says. Yeah, so, I think there's always been a tendency... Well, I say always, I don't really have a way to back that up. I think, for a lot of recorded history... There has been a tendency for people to want to predict weather,
right?
Clearly, but also to try and control it.
Mm-hmm.
That gets into an interesting question for me. One of the first books I ever got into that had to do with natural magic and particularly weather magic was Scott Cunningham's Earth Power. They want the other half of our listening audience, by the way. Scott Cunningham. See if Dave the Bard's playing on another channel. Okay. Let's see. One of the things he says in his book, in a spell about stopping rain, he says, naturally, these techniques might work and then again might not. They've been formulated during the last several thousand years out of our desire to control our environment. This cannot happen. We cannot control the weather any more than we can control earthquakes. Nature must be allowed her release, or even greater trouble will surely follow. So what do you think about that?
It's funny because whenever I've done weather magic, which I used to do a lot of when I was first starting out, and it's funny that you mentioned Earth Power because one of the first books that I read and really influenced my magic was Earth, Air, Fire, and Water, also by Cunningham, which I think is like kind of the sequel to Earth Power, sort of, so the follow-up to it.
Cunningham, no one is listening now. We can say anything we want.
Bring on the hookers and blow. So anyway, I totally lost my train of thought.
Yeah, it's the hookers and blow. It'll do it to you.
That's right. Blow. No. With
speaking of blow, doing, how about those winds?
Doing the weather magic. I've always asked for weather to come to me and not really to stop. So like I've asked for rain, I've asked for snow, but I've never like, you know, really asked for it to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Raining or stop snowing.
Mm.
I have done like a little, maybe make it less, like, mm-hmm. Hey, lighten up a little bit. Like, say I'm in the car and I'm driving and it's raining so hard, like, you know, I'll say something or chant something to, you know, in hopes of it lightening. But it's never crossed my mind that I can make it stop.
Mm.
So I think there is some validity to what he says.
And I understand where he's coming from on that. Like, you know, nature has to have a vent. But the thing for me is nature is going to find a vent. Nature will always find a vent. And, you know, if I've got this ability to protect myself or my family, I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, mostly I've always done sort of weather drawing spells, primarily winds. Ever since I was a little kid, I was really, you know, the weird kid in the neighborhood would walk around with a staff and find a, you know, dirt hill and stand on it and scream at the winds and try to call the winds.
Right.
Because I thought I was a wizard. And I was.
Of course.
Don't doubt me or I'll turn you into a rogue. Anyway, so yeah, I would always call the winds. But like we said, we're, you know, on the borders of Tornado Alley.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever there's a tornado, I do this one spell where I will take a knife, and I'll go and drive it into the ground from whichever direction the winds are going, with the sharp edge pointing into the winds.
Okay.
So it will cut the winds around the house and keep them from destroying the house. And that's something I've always done.
Do you use a really sharp knife, or can you just use, like, any knife?
I can use a knife. Any, you know, like a dinner knife is fine. You know, okay. I wouldn't use, like, a butter knife.
No. Okay. Well, no. That's pretty cool.
Not trying to smear the wind.
So, yeah, well, talk about some of the, you know, the actual weather magic you've done.
Okay. Done the spells to break the winds.
To cut the wind.
To cut the wind. Done the summoning the winds. One of the things I've always had a really strong connection to are winds, particularly the four winds. In a lot of my magical practice, I've kind of given up on the idea of four elements. Not because I think that it's, you know, there's anything wrong with it. It's just that I don't identify with it. It comes out of, after reading a lot of history and knowing, like, okay, yes, it was in ancient Greece, but then it just sort of, you know, it was basically alchemical and high magic, and it wasn't really part of low magic for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm more interested in the folk magic type stuff. So I avoided elemental magic for a while.
Okay.
I'm just clarifying that because the one area where it still sticks with me is in winds. There's a passage from, so I can remember it, from Ovid's Metamorphoses that is, and of the four winds, each had his home, yet so wildly did the brothers quarrel that even now the world is almost torn in a war of winds. Eurus, whose winged breath stirs air, be went where the eastern hills glow with dawn, where the western shores are lit with fires, their Zephyrus with setting sun came home, while ice-tongued Boreas roared in farthest north, and austere the south wind gathered summer storms, and shining over them all floated the heavenly ether. And so I've always had that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, so I've always thought of the four winds as inhabited by four kings,
mm-hmm.
Which is why in some of my magical workings I'll pull the four kings out of the deck of cards and use those
right.
as my cardinal points.
Aren't you an air sign?
Yes.
As well?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't have, you know, I don't have a lot of other identifying factors with air other than wind. And I'm also very long-winded, as you can hear.
Full of hot air. Well, that is very true. No, I'm kidding.
Thanks. I tend to still work with those four kings. There's also cross-quartural kings. Rather than having the cardinal points of the compass, I think they're called the ordinal points,
mm-hmm.
the points between the cardinal points. And those also have kings as well, but I haven't worked as much with them. So if I do, I'll let y'all know.
So how did calling the winds, how did that work for you?
Always did.
Really?
Never had a problem calling them. I don't know that I've ever had a problem. I don't know that, like, in calling them I ever got, you know, like, I'm calling the north wind will blow now. And I got an exact north wind.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I start summoning them, I get them, you know. I don't really use them
right.
unless I'm, you know, doing something very specific. Like if I need wind to, like, if I'm going to toss something into the air so it can go off and do its, you know, its awesome, like, oh, look at it float away magical effect,
mm-hmm.
then that's a good time to use it. But otherwise I don't tend to.
So have you done any other sort of weather stuff? Like rain, snow?
No, I've never tried to summon snow. I've done, there's something that you can do where you take a broom and you dip it in a bucket of water and you fling the water into the air to call rain. And I've done that to help with, like gardening,
mm-hmm.
to get rain for the garden. But that's about the extent of my summoning of weather. And that's very low magic. There's no, you know, there's no incantation. There's nothing said. It's just,
right.
you know, dip broom in water, fling.
There you go. Hmm.
What about you?
My earliest form of weather magic was purely accidental. It was when I had just started, really getting into spells and stuff. So I was still in high school. And, you know, I was very Wicca at the time, and I got it in my head that I needed rainwater, you know, to help, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, consecrate certain things and, you know, just to have. It was just a good thing to have. So I just got it in my head. I really needed it. And, I kept thinking about it, and I wrote about it in my journal, and I put out a cup on my windowsill to catch rainwater just in case it rained, like, you know, in the middle of the night, and I wasn't up to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about it for like a week, and it started raining and raining and raining.
Didn't you get like 3 days of rain out of that?
We got flash flooding out of that.
Good job.
They had to close schools, actually.
Good job, Lynn. Good job. You just don't like going to school, apparently.
Apparently.
Trying to flood it and freeze it.
Well, it's funny because I cannot remember any other time that we got closed for flooding except for that one time.
Hmm.
And it didn't even really occur to me. And then, like, I remember pulling the water in from my windowsill and being, like, excited about it. And then I thought, oh, my God, I did this. And it was really kind of empowering.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. Something else I've done with the snow magic, we didn't just do the dance like with me and my friends, but I would also go home. And I don't know why I decided to do this, but I also did knot magic.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used a white, ribbon,
mm-hmm.
To bring snow. And
That's clever.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just did it.
White for snow, and then if you're tying knots in it, there's a spell that I'll be hopefully talking a little bit about, summoning the winds using knots.
So that was always fairly effective, I found. What else? I know that one time that we were out together.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just going around to the different New Agey stores around our city.
Mm-hmm.
And we had bought a book.
Of which there are two.
Yeah. Yay. Two whole ones.
Two fantastic stores.
But we bought a book.
It's Grimoire for the Green Witch by Anne Moira, who I think also goes by Eomiel or something.
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, let's see.
It's an interesting book. It's an interesting blend of Wicca and hedgewitchery.
Yeah.
So there's some
really
stuff.
Good stuff in here. Yeah. It's like you said earlier, I wouldn't use everything in it, but mm-hmm. there's some good stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to read the whole thing because, well, that's what I did. You know, Corey.
I'm looking out the window while you do this. I'm just saying because I'm waiting to see the rain.
Well, we were in the car. And we were just reading through it, and I said, oh, this is cool. Here's a rain spell. And I started reading it because he wanted to hear it, but he was driving. And I swear the sky got dark, and it started to rain.
Yeah.
And I think in logic's defense, it was a little overcast that day.
Yeah.
It had held off the entire day.
Yeah, there was definitely some rain predicted.
But I swear the clouds darkened. But I started reading this thing.
Yeah, and then she immediately closed the book, and we're like, okay, we're not reading from that anymore today.
Yeah. So, should I read from it?
Do you want me to read from it? It's because, like, I probably am not going to be summoning any bad weather.
You read it.
All right. So just imagine this in Lane's lovely voice instead of my own. It says that it's performed during whenever there's a need for rain. You stand outdoors with arms raised and call to the sky. I call upon the elemental water, elemental fire, elemental air, and elemental earth. Come together in this place. Wind come round and lightning clash. Rain pour down onto the ground. All are kin and heed this call, for earth and those upon do thirst. You visualize the elementals coming together and say, elemental air, bring cooling breezes. Elemental fire, bring lightning flashes. Elemental water, bring rain to fall. Elemental earth, reach up to receive them all. With hands, gather energy of the air and motion towards the ground. Place hands palms down in a gesture of blessing and say, with blessings given and blessings received, I chant this spell, that as I will, so mote it be. So elemental.
Yeah.
Elemental spell.
I didn't even finish it in the car either.
No, you got to right about where we get to elemental air, bring cooling breezes or something. Yeah. And it was already starting to pour.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we're done with that.
I was like, okay, done with that one. So that was cool. But anyway, you know, I've always felt close to weather magic. And I always felt it was very effective for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know about anybody else.
Oh, I have to tell this story. But weather magic I saw performed.
Okay.
When I was at a Stevie Nicks concert.
Ah, that's right. You told me the story.
I love this story. Oh, it's so fun. Okay, for those who don't know who Stevie Nicks is, she was one of the lead singers of Fleetwood Mac.
If you don't know who she is,
you're dead to us.
Yeah, you're dead. I'm sorry. kidding, but I love her.
Anyway, so she was one of the lead singers of Fleetwood Mac. She's also had a really good solo career on her own. And she has a reputation for being a witch. She's never confirmed it. There were interviews a while back having to do with Fleetwood Mac, and I think Courtney Love was one of the ones that was interviewed about her and said that something like, you know, when you go to Stevie Nicks' house, there are things you expect to see when you walk in her garden, you know, fairies and gnomes and magical objects and crystal balls and things, and you're not disappointed. So she clearly has always had this sort of magical leaning. Mm-hmm. So whether or not she ever acknowledges any witchcraft on her part it's always sort of there in her shadow.
She sort of exudes it.
She really does. Yeah. It doesn't help that she's almost always wearing all black and a shawl and twirling around.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went to go see her, my friend of mine and I, and it had been predicted to rain all day long, just, you know, thunderstorms, not just like a little bit of rain. And as we're listening to the concert, there's no rain. The rain is held off around us pretty well. And it starts to sprinkle a little bit, and she's about a third of the way through her show. Well, she just brought on her special guest, who happened to be Sheryl Crow, who was doing a couple songs with her at the time. And she left the stage. Stevie Nicks left the stage just as the rain started. And Sheryl did, you know, two or three songs. And the rain stopped. And Stevie Nicks came back on and finished her set, and there was no rain for the rest of that show, even though all around us, all around the amphitheater where we were seeing her, you could see storms, like lightning storms and cloud bursts everywhere around us, but the actual theater we were at, completely bone dry, until Stevie had completely finished her set and gone off stage, and then it poured.
That is so cool.
I'm like, that woman, she eats a placenta, bah! To stay so young. I mean, she is witchy. So that's, you know, are there any other thoughts we have on weather magic? I mean, are there weather spells that you would want to try, or are there weather spells you think people should avoid?
I think fire is a very volatile, hard to control element. I would be very careful about messing with fire.
Mm-hmm. Calling down fire generally tends to call down fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I mean, of course, any of these could be dangerous.
Yeah.
But.
Well, there's the whole, you know, back in like 19th and 18th century, one of the things witches would do is they would summon hailstorms to blight crops.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, there's no fire there, but you have, you know, water,
mm-hmm.
air, ice. Yep. So, I mean, any of these things can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, in the extreme. So you just really have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Practice in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that about does it for us on weather, I think.
Yep.
Stay tuned after this little break. We're going to be having our new segments. Lane will have her witchcraft segment, which is going to be a lot of fun. And I'll be doing my magic spelled out.
Woohoo!
So stay tuned, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hi, I'm J.O. Scully, host of Witchery of One, a podcast that focuses on the experiences, practices, and opinions of one witch, me. Shows for download can be found on my blog page, which is witcheryofone.libsyn.com, or do a search on iTunes. All blessings be.
Okay, so this is the first segment of witchcraft. And what I hope to do with this is not anything, because Corey's making crazy faces at me. Anyhow, what I hope to do with this is bring together the magical and the mundane in a crafty way. And I don't just mean in witchcraft, but in a, you know, sort of arts and crafts type of way as well. Because I'm pretty big into a lot of different crafts, so hopefully I will influence you to be as well.
She's a heck of a knitter, folks.
And that is why my first segment is on knitting. Woo! When you talk about knitting magic, it is definitely mixing the magical and the mundane. Knitting is just the act of forming a fabric by looping a continuous strand of yarn, and it is essentially not magic, but for those who don't knit, you should know that you never actually tie a knot. You're not supposed to. The only knot you do is a slip knot when you first cast on. So, you're just, with the needles, you're forming loops, you know, on top of loops with this continuous strand of yarn. So, you know, you can do it for fun or for magic. And the psychological effects are pretty well proven. It can be very meditative because it's such a repetitive action. They've done studies on it, and it can actually take you from, like, what is the normal brainwave?
Like, you go from alpha to beta, or yes. Beta to alpha.
Yeah, something. One of the two. I'm sorry, I didn't do very
delta
much.
Delta to gamma, iota thigh, I felt a thigh.
Who knows?
Warm apple pie, I don't know. One of those fraternities.
But you go from your normal resting brainwaves to the higher...
Theta,
that's it. You go to theta brainwaves. Another thing that I really like about knitting and the psychological effects of it is what I call one stitch adds up to many. Like, when you think about it, a scarf has around... Oh, I did the math one night. Now I'm totally blank. Okay, this could be totally wrong. I'm just going to throw a number out there. But it's close. Around 40,000 stitches. So you think, 40,000? I can't do 40,000 stitches. You know, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you just do the one stitch and you do it over and you do it over. And it really adds up. And, you know, and then you see this long piece of fabric that you have made. And, you know, to me, that really kind of shifted over into other parts of my life. And I think it can really help with your magic as well, because, you know, you see so much going on around you and you think, well, what can I do? You know? But if you just do one little spell to say, help, maybe get a job, like I have with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that job creates more income for you, which creates more time to do maybe something for charity. And, you know, and then you're helping people that way. So mm-hmm. One little action can really add up to a whole lot of other actions. It's like you were talking about earlier with the butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, that's just one thing I've notice more with knitting. So anyway, now that we're, you know, done talking about the psychological effects, let's get into the practical uses. There are two basic stitches. There is a knit and a purl. So I've heard, there's actually a lot of different patterns out there where people put like a code into it. And actually, if you've read A Tale of Two Cities, that's how Madame Defarge, mm-hmm. She's actually knitting the Death List.
Mm-hmm.
She's using knits and purls. So,
it's interesting, wasn't that, there was an Angelina Jolie movie, Wanted.
Was the loom, though, that's weaving.
Right, where they were weaving a pattern into something yes. Like that.
Yes, and every time there was, like, a little mistake, it was read in a certain way, and yeah. So, yeah, basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you could definitely, you know, use that to your advantage. Some people use it as binary, like, knit is a one and, purl is a zero.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually make words, you know, into your scarf or sweater or whatever. Which I think is pretty cool. So if you wanted to do like some sort of invocation or chant or something like that, you know, you could actually work it into your scarf. And like, say it was some sort of thing of protection and you were, you know, out in like a sketchy part of town, you know, you're wearing your scarf, you feel protected.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love that.
Yeah. So that's just one thing you can do to, you know, for like a magical use. Another is to really be careful or not be careful, but, to really think about your colors that you're going to use. Now, you know, when I knit, I don't necessarily always knit magically. You know, I knit very mundanely as well. So, you know, I pick colors because I like them. But, you know, you, if you're going to knit for a magical reason, you could pick them using color correspondence that you can, you know, to affect change. Like, if you want to knit a bag, you know, you could knit it in black and it would protect your stuff that you carry with you. Or, knit a red sweater if you want to exude confidence and wear it to a job interview or out on a first date or something like that. Or maybe like a blue blanket to help you sleep. Maybe like a, you know, lavender, something like that. So something else you can do is knit things for use in the craft, such as altar cloths or, you can get really simple with that and just knit, you know, like garter stitch, which is just knit all the way around, you know, back and forth, back and forth. Or you can get really intricate with lace or color work. And then let's see, what else could you do? Bags for like, you know, tarot cards or any other little things you have laying around. Like if you have a lot of stones, or.
I mean, anything, like you could probably do little mojo bags.
Yeah. You could do that too. That'd be a good one, especially if you made it,
red.
Made it red. So, and then you can also use, you know, for like for ceremonial clothes. Now, that's a little bit more of an undertaking, but you could do it.
It would mean a lot to you when you were done.
Definitely.
Actually, Juniper at Benningstone and Garden Gate just posted something the other day. She doesn't knit, she crochets. Mm-hmm. She's crocheting herself like a prayer shawl.
Yeah, a lot of people actually do prayer shawls, and that's mostly in the Christian faith. But, you know, of course, it transfers over. And their idea is, and I think it transfers into ours, is that because you're meditating on it when you knit, you're working that prayer into each stitch, which is very witchy, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing, too, if you, like, I've read an article on knitting magic that I'll cite on the show notes. Another good thing to do is to knit to help you meditate. So, like, you know, take your knitting with, you know, simple knitting with you, and work on that. And it helps you get into that theta brainwave state. And that would, you know, help you meditate and, you know, think the day's thoughts pretty much. And
I imagine, because a lot of times when you're knitting something, you're knitting the same number of stitches over and over again,
mm-hmm.
that you could probably, it'd be like a rosary,
yeah.
where each stitch could be a little mini prayer that you're doing as
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, kind of, definitely. And one thing I do want to talk about is pay attention to the yarn you're using. I'm going to admit it right now, I'm a fiber snob. I don't think that you should, there's a place for acrylic for certain things, but it's actually pretty bad for the environment, and I really don't think it has a place in knitting magic. I have a book here. It's from The Knitter's Book of Yarn by Clara Parks, on what acrylic is.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes, of course.
In commercial production since 1950, acrylic fiber was born from the wartime development of synthetic rubbers. Technically, acrylic fibers are anything that has a chemical base of 85 to 90% vinyl cyanide or acrylonitrile? I don't know. It's the remaining 15-10%, often called the minor constituent, that determines the special characteristics of the fiber and justifies a separate brand name, of which there are many. So, it has excellent elasticity, second only to nylon, but
it has cyanide in it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically petroleum, there's a petroleum...
it's a synthetic rubber offshoot. Yeah.
The stuff that's produced.
It's a byproduct.
Yeah, byproduct. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. That comes from it is pretty gross. So anyway, it's synthetic. You don't really want to use it in magic. You want to use, you know, wool, cotton, linen, bamboo, you know, they're angora, just anything from an animal. You know, there's tons of stuff out there.
And there's a lot of that that probably isn't all that much more expensive than the acrylic. Like bamboo, I think, is...
Well, the thing about bamboo is it does get kind of expensive, but it's a renewable resource because bamboo grows so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people don't have a problem with it. And some people do have a problem with wool because they say that it hurts the sheep, but...
I will attest right now, it doesn't do crap to the sheep. The sheep
The sheep need it. I mean, they don't shed it anymore.
Yeah, they want to be shorn.
Right. So
believe me, they are happier when they are shorn in the hot summer than you think they are.
Well, some people have problems with. I'm not sure if this is practiced in the States, but I know it is in Australia. It's called mulesing. Is that how it's pronounced?
I've never heard of it.
There are folds on the back of a sheep near mm-hmm. its tail, mm-hmm. and near its ass area
mm-hmm.
where, you know, feces and dirt collects.
Mm-hmm.
And so the farmers will cut the folds. And I assume it hurts when they do it. But if they don't, flies, certain kind of bugs will lay their eggs in the sheep's skin. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it will, their larva will, you know, burrow and really hurt the sheep and it can kill them.
Hmm.
And the practice of cutting these folds off is called mulesing. I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing that right. I've only seen it, you know, I've only read it. I've never actually heard it pronounced. So some people are against that because the folds, cutting it, you know, probably hurts the sheep. But in the long run, it helps them way more. So right. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like we would dock our sheep's tails because I don't know if people realize this. Sheep don't have cute little fluffy cotton tails naturally. They have long tails.
Yeah.
And you have to dock them because of the same thing. Like if you leave those tails long, yes, in the natural scheme of things, they could probably keep themselves clean to a point. But but in reality, they're just as much likely to get disease from it. And so you have to dock the tails up so that they're not, you know, having this tail hanging over fecal matter mm-hmm. and keeping nastiness close to them.
Right. So, anyway, it's just something to think about. I definitely recommend natural fibers when you use it for knitting magic. If you're just doing knitting, then whatever you can afford and whatever's fine, you know, that's fine with me. But knitting magic, use natural fibers.
Right.
So, anyway, that's it for knitting magic. Do you have any more questions?
No, that's fun. I like that.
Yeah.
Makes me want to knit. Not going to. I know way too many knitters. And they're all crazy people. Crazy people.
So here's some resources for you, and we'll link these on the show notes. Knittinghelp.com, theanticraft.com, which is actually pretty cool because it comes out with each pagan holiday. And it is, you know, each of the projects, it's not just knitting, but each of the projects and recipes and stuff like that has to do with the particular holiday. And another one, of course, is Ravelry. If you're a knitter, you know exactly what that is. But if you don't, it's just a huge, it's forums, it's patterns, it's an organization for any yarn you have. And it's just a really great website. So, yeah, check them out.
Cool.
So that's it for knitting.
Awesome. Thank you, Lane. Well, all right. We will again take a minuscule break, and then we'll be back after that. Stick around, won't you?
The world is a magical place, just as our lives are magical. I'm Saturn, and I invite you to travel with me in a journey of personal exploration and spiritual development on Pennies in the Well, a podcast focusing on magic, life, and living. You can search for me on iTunes and Podcast Alley, or go to my website at www.penniesinthewell.com. Come, slip into the well with me, and discover the treasures that lie waiting for you.
All right, we're back. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today on New World Witchery. We're trying out a couple of new segments. My segment is going to be called Magic Spelled Out. Hopefully I've found some catchy theme music to go with this. If not, then you can just imagine whatever wonderful theme music you want. What this segment is going to be about is I really originally wanted to do it as sort of a... like an ingredient of the week or a, you know, spellcrafting component of the week type of, Lane sneaking in a very cartoonish fashion, creeping with her little hands up like a T-Rex. Yes. So what I'd originally hoped for this to be was that sort of spellcrafting ingredient of the week thing. But what I'm finding is there are a lot of podcasts out there that do that very, very well. Peter Patton's Crooked Path podcast had an herb segment every week that was just fantastic with Raven Womack. And then currently there's a really neat podcast called Witch's Brew Haha with Velma Nightshade, and she does a practical magic ingredient of the week using things like, you know, Sharpies and Easter candy, which I think is just really adorably cute.
Mm-hmm.
So I dig that. So what I decided I wanted to do instead is focus on specific spells. And I want to go through how the spell is performed, you know, go through basic instructions. And then I want to go through and figure out why the spell is put together the way it is. And what is actually going on behind the scenes of this spell? Why did we think it worked? Why do I think it works anyway?
I'm pretty excited about it personally. I think it's a really good idea.
Cool, thanks. That means I got one fan.
Woo!
So, yeah, because the... I think if you know how a spell works, it's more meaningful, one, because then you understand the mechanics of it. I think you can do it better on your end, so you get the results you want. But it also means that if for some reason I go through a spell and it says, okay, now you need to use Joe Pye weed. Well, if you're living in Australia, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of Joe Pye weed easily available without ordering it. But if you understand the mechanics of it, being like, oh, well, you used your pie weed because it has this influence. Oh, well, then I can just find something that has that influence and understand how it fits into the grander scheme of the spell and make that spell work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going for. And the spells I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to be digging back into my roots. Like I said, some of my earliest magical experiences were with Scott Cunningham's Earth Power. So I'm going to go through a couple of spells from that. And let's see, let's start with, here's a spell called the Weather Strip, which is something I found in a lot of places. It's basically a knot binding spell where you bind up a certain amount of wind in each knot. I've seen it used especially for sailors.
Mm-hmm.
Sailors would buy these cords. They could then carry out to sea, and if their ship was ever becalmed, they could unknot the cord one knot at a time to summon up enough wind to get where they needed to go. So the basic spell goes like this. The Weather Strip. Used to raise winds at sea to fill the sails or on land. In an old rawhide thong of about an arm's length, tie a knot 3 inches from the end, a second knot 6 inches from the first, and a third 9 inches from the second knot. To activate the spell, untie the knots. For a gentle breeze, untie the first knot, concentrating on waves or leaves of grass blowing. For a stronger wind, untie the second knot, concentrating on a steady wind filling a ship's sails. For a gale, careful, untie the last knot, thinking of a heavy gale and lots of wind action. It is done. Now, the way I've heard that spell done specifically, instead of just knotting 3 knots in a cord, you actually have to knot them in each of the conditions.
Yeah, I started to say, it sounds like you need to do something in particular when you actually knot it.
Yes, and that's how I've come to understand it since reading this version originally. And the reason that works the way it does is because you're creating sort of, you're sort of tying a spirit up, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. So the spirit that is found in a breeze, you bind that spirit to that knot of the cord. And then when you release it, it brings that breeze with it. As it escapes from your cord, so the wind blows. Mm-hmm. And so in each of the three weather conditions that you're untying, you're actually untying those specific spirits of that level of wind. So that's how that kind of a spell works.
I'd really like to try that.
I would too. Actually, I've done something similar to that with winds before. And it got wind. Definitely did wind up causing some wind. I don't think it actually got to the gale force, but I don't think I actually unbound it to a gale force. Like, I think I was just kind of testing it out. Okay, and I'll admit this, I think I threw that cord away, which is really irresponsible to do magically, because if you do think of it as, I've bound up three spirits in this piece of string, and then you throw that away, that's a couple of spirits that are not going to be too happy with me later on down the line. So what I'm hoping is that all of my spiritual activity in the time since has insulated me from that problem. But we'll see if that happens or not. Yeah.
Well, did you actually think of it that way when you did it?
No.
See, then that changes things for me.
For you, it changes things. But I tend to think back on it and go, oh, I was so stupid. But I mean, I do think those spirits, you know, eventually, whatever happened to that cord, I'm sure it broke down.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happened, then those spirits got free. They're probably okay. I feel bad for who? Well, now that I'm thinking about it, that area was hit by a horrible tornado.
Really?
Yes. Just last year. Fantastic job, Corey. Well done. Beautiful.
And you yelled at me for the flood.
I know. What's up? Hey, you're just trying to get out of school. I'm trying to wipe the school off the map. What's up with that? Okay. Let's see. Okay. And then I've got a couple of spells. These are taken from Judica Iles, or possibly Iles. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Mm-hmm. I think it's Judica Iles. I think I've heard it pronounced that way. She has a fantastic book of, it's called The Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Both Lane and I have a copy. We both love it. I know there's people out there who hate on it. all I can say is it's incredibly well researched. It's not necessarily incredibly well edited for an academic audience, mm-hmm. because basically all she's doing is collecting spells and putting them in a book for you. And it's up to you to figure out, you know, how legitimate they are. She's just organizing them for right. you. But a lot of them are fun. Okay, she's got a couple of broom spells. One is a broom spell to raise the winds. Throw a broom up into the air, preferably from a mountaintop or a height. Summon the air spirits. Broom spell to calm winds. Burn the broom once the winds are no longer required. Bury the ashes. Don't let any float in the air. Hmm. I've seen, you know, brooms clearly are associated with weather lore quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of fun. The mechanics of that, I know that the actual herb known as broom, which has been used to make brooms before, but is not, it's not really currently used to make brooms, has a strong association with weather magic. And so I think that that's kind of how it eventually came into, you know, we went from use the herb broom to control weather to use a broom to control weather.
Oh.
So, but if you're going to go beyond that, I would say sympathetically, if you take a broom and you swish it through the air, you hear that wind moving. Mm-hmm. And you create a sort of microcosm of moving wind based on that broom. And so it becomes this smaller part affecting the greater part.
Right.
Which is basically, it's sort of a mix of sympathetic and contagious magic in that mm-hmm. way. Because one, you're doing a sympathetic ritual to influence or something bigger. But two, you're actually doing it in the air. So you're hoping that your little butterfly wing flapping of right. your broom is going to create the bigger wind. Mm-hmm. Then brooming it, you're symbolically removing that influence. And then you keep the ashes from floating in the air because you don't want anything. You don't want to infect the air with that contagious magic anymore. You mm-hmm. want to completely seal it. So that's how that works. And then finally, this is just one of my favorite little spells. And I haven't used it. I hate to say that. I have not used the spell, but I'm absolutely going to use this spell next time we have a drought. And it's called Mr. Pitiful. And this is, one, find a picture, image, drawing, or photograph of the most pathetic person you can. Two, the spell works best if this is a person you do not actually know. The only feeling you should have towards this person is pity. Three, burn the image. The goal is not to harm the person. The magical theory is that the very heavens will pity the poor, miserable person and pour water down to relieve any further misery.
Oh.
That one, the mechanics are very straightforward. Yeah. The mechanics are, okay, so one, you're doing sympathetic magic in that you're using something small to affect something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you're also doing this really, really clever appeal to spiritual forces to come to your aid.
Right.
In that you're not only making a prayer saying, please give me rain, you're saying, you know, it's sort of the Jewish grandmother approach to it, being like, look at this face. Look at this. And he's on fire. How can you let this face be on fire? Surely you can spare a cup of water. You can spare some water for this poor face. Look at him. And I just love that approach to magic. It's sort
of the guilt trip.
Yeah. Like, I think it's so clever. It's such a way to like be like, you know, I know that these spiritual forces that we can interact with, and it doesn't always have to be this highfalutin, you know.
Right.
Oh, I call upon
we call you.
The seventh house of the fourth sign. I summon thee into my circle in my square of great cosmic penis power. You know, it's not that. It's much more of like, look at this face. It's just really, I love it. I think it's so fantastic. So anywho, so yes, that is our first ever Magic Spelled Out segment. I hope you enjoyed it. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed those new segments. Those were, we're testing them out. I know I promise mine will get better. This one, I just have so many spells I wanted to do. I'm hoping to be a little more intensive on specific spells in the future, but I just had so many I wanted to do. I couldn't pick just one. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and I hope you like mine too. And it won't just be about needlecrafts, you know, it'll be about little mundane things that you can use in your witchcraft as well. So
I know you've mentioned a jar full of buttons, and I'm just intrigued by that.
Yeah, I think that'll be next. That'll be fun.
Yay, jar full of buttons.
So, yeah, thanks for listening. If you want to contact us, of course, there's the blog, which is newoldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Or you can feel free to email us. Our email address is compassandkey@gmail.com. We also have an Etsy craft shop, which is linked to on our blog, but it's the Compass and Key Apothecary on Etsy. So you can find us that way as well.
Yes.
So that's it for this week. You know, stay dry and avoid the stormy weather unless you like that sort of thing, in which case I probably like you. So, so anyway, that's our show for this week.
Thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blue. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.